You have tuned into an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening.
It's Cascadia News Now with your host, Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson. And tonight, we are joined by two very special co-hosts, former County and City Councilman Teresa Wood.
Hello.
And Enviro Political Man About Town and Erickson Tracker, Alex Rammel. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Stephanie Contouris, and we are going to get into some dog tracking later in the show. And also a look at Saving Blanchard Forest, what bills live and died last week in Olympia. But first, let's look at the roller coaster ride of good and bad news on the LGBTQ front. As we were watching today, there was lots of threats that Trump is going to repeal the national transgender law. It has not come down, but it seems from all the sources I've read, almost certain. And this is reversing the Obama initiative that allowed transgender students to use the restrooms for their gender of choice. Attorney General Sessions issued an order, caused a tiff with Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, which was kind of surprising. DeVos initially refused and was at least trying to keep protections for trans students against bullying. And so we're waiting for that, and that is hugely awful. It's just awful. The slightly good news is that Washington State, they had a similar repeal. We had a similar repeal effort, and it failed in the legislature on February 10th. And thank God for states' rights. I never thought I would say that. But here we are in a completely different world.
Right. And, you know, for me, it's always discouraging to hear the Attorney General of the United States saying that he thinks that our values and our ethics should be decided jurisdiction by jurisdiction, particularly in the area of people's rights as individuals. What this does is essentially this new directive puts us back into a position where people that got married in a particular state might not be able to enjoy their marriage rights by going into a different state. It really turns the clock back on some things that I think a lot of us were hopeful that we'd moved on past. As you'd mentioned, there was a Supreme Court case decided last week that upheld a decision by the lower courts that basically said that businesses cannot discriminate against individuals in a commercial transaction. And this was related to a case in Richland, Washington, where a florist had decided that...
Well, just before we get into that, I just want to stick with just for one moment, because there, for some people, this is not on their radar.
Right.
And so, and I think what you're talking about is the looming doom of equal marriage rights and other LGBTQ rights. This specific bill was a bill that protected trans students and gave them the ability to not be as bullied when they try to use the bathroom in a public restroom. And it has come up again and again in Washington State. I just want to clarify really briefly, and we can get on to the important Flowers case, that this is presented over and over and over again as an issue of protecting people who are the same gender that they were born as. But there are murder after murder after murder after of trans person every year, particularly trans people of color. The people who go into bathrooms are not a threat. They actually are the gender they have chosen, and they are in all aspects the same gender as the people who use the bathroom. And if somebody who is one gender is forced to not go into the bathroom of the gender they're chosen, they are attacked and they are bullied. And this can cause pain and death for a lot of people. So I just wanted to clarify, because I think it doesn't come on people's radar.
Right, right. And the point I was trying to make about the Supreme Court case, Washington State Supreme Court case, was, you know, the debate going on at the national level is people believe that they have a personal right to hate and to be bigots and that this is part of their freedom to do these actions. And the Supreme Court did not comment on people's general capacity to hate, but in a commercial sense, if you're in commercial business under the laws of Washington, you can't discriminate on the basis of someone's sexual orientation. You can't refuse to a service based on who somebody loves. And the interesting thing is, you know, this Attorney General of the United States has said that he intends that these issues are going to be adjudicated state by state. And the good news for Washington is, Washington is a state that is not going to put up with this.
Well, so just looking again at that, at the case that you're referring to, this was a Richland florist in 2013, refused to provide flowers for a gay wedding. As you noted, this has happened in different places all over the country. They are claiming, people like this are claiming that they have a religious right to refuse service, harkening back to civil rights period. And in the decision, the Washington Supreme Court said that flower arrangements do not constitute freedom of speech, which I thought was good. They also said in their decision, this case is no more about access to flowers than civil rights cases in the 1960s were about access to sandwiches. And I mean, bravo. We have the best judicial system, I think, in the country right now. And more power to them. And so that is where we are for that issue. And then moving on, there was recently a telephone town hall with Chris Litton, our representatives in the 40th, Chris Litton and Jeff Morris, about the Blanchard Mountains, Blanchard Forest area. They are looking at a potential logging of 1,600 acres unless $7.7 million is found. And so they're looking at different areas. Just to give some background, this area that we're talking about is in Skagit, includes the Oyster Dome, the Samish Bay Trail. And then we're talking about the Blanchard State Forest Corps. And this area is a recreational area. It's also forest area. I mean, it's a development area that the state has. And the money they get from logging supports Skagit schools, Med1. And so it becomes a very difficult issue.
Right. And I'll let our guests speak more to this, because I think they're more knowledgeable than either of us are. But I would say that this is a little tragedy in the making, because a lot of time has been spent trying to come up with a compromise agreement that would allow a lot of the area around this sensitive area to be logged for commercial logging enterprise, but would save the best parts of it for the public. And so for it to be lost in the 11th hour because of a funding loss of $7.7 million is a tragedy. It's a public tragedy.
Agreed. Just the briefest context, I think, Alex, you're going to comment on some of the details, perhaps, but viewers should be aware that this is the only place in the Pacific Northwest, in the lower 48, where there's continuous forestry, and I'm talking generally about the Chuckanuts now, continuous forestry from the center of the Cascades west all the way down to the sea. So I'm a member of a group called the Chuckanut Conservancy, who has as a broad goal the preservation of that entire area that we think of as the Chuckanuts, so that we'd create a permanent place where natural protection of this corridor, the only corridor, as I said, in the Pacific Northwest. And Blanchard is sort of the central southern corridor, as we say, of the Chuckanuts. It's an absolutely critical, beautiful place.
So, Blanchard is part of the Chuckanut.
Thank you. Yeah, Blanchard is part of the Chuckanut Range.
So, I guess the question I wanted to bring up here is really just where this fits within the rest of the state legislature's challenges right now, because the last few years we've had a divided legislature with the Republicans controlling the Senate and the Democrats controlling the House, and it appears to this observer at least like it's much more difficult to get anything done in the last few years. And with the McCleary decision, that has eaten up a lot of the space and time that they've had to deal with problems. Unfortunately, our state has more than one problem a year, and it seems like this $7 million is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money in the context of the state government's budget. This isn't actually even general fund money as I understand it. It seems like we should be able to solve this kind of problem
right.
relatively easily.
Particularly and Representative Morris and Litton were talking about, and I'm sure, Tim, you know more about this, a trust lands transfer program. And can you tell us more about that?
Right. Now, the comment I was going to make there was that it's really tragic because this is not an immediate problem. This is not emergent on the state. This has been worked on for a long time. The amount of money that needed is about half of the money has been raised. The other half is required. There are a lot of minds at work on this. The Public Lands Commissioner is in support of some kind of an agreement. And as you said, Alex, it's a shame that all the oxygen is being pulled out on all these other things that we need to do as a society because we can't resolve the issue with schools. So what we end up with is we don't get resolution on schools, and on top of that, we don't get resolution on these other issues. So to answer your question, Stephanie, what Chris Litton and Jeff Morris are at work on is if they can't get the $7.7 million in one way, is there another way to achieve this goal? And I think that there could be. The deadline on this is somewhat artificial. It probably could be scaled back, could be pushed back. And you know, the interesting thing about this issue is that I don't think that the timber industry is heavily invested in this beautiful lookout site. If there is a transfer in place that gives them logging revenues elsewhere, then I think that they are willing to negotiate on a clear cut here. And so, like I say, this is a little tragedy in the making because I think you've got a lot of goodwill all the way around, and you've got $7.7 million that you've got to come up with, which in a $5 billion budget or $4 billion is a drop in the bucket.
And you are listening to Cascadia News Now with co-hosts this week, Alex Remmel, Seth Fleetwood, and Tim Johnson. And Seth, I know in the Chaconet area, I think it's the 100-acre wood area, that people elected, the local citizens elected to pay an additional tax. And is that, I don't know, is that something that we could look at in this situation? Is that working?
Well, right, and that's a reference to the Metropolitan Parks District that was created in southern Bellingham to help pay for the cost of acquiring the 100-acre woods. Interestingly enough, I believe the idea, the discussion around creating a metropolitan, using that state device, the Metropolitan Parks District, originated because before that, there was an effort to create a Metropolitan Parks District in the Chaconuts, which you'll recall failed. And I believe the idea was to utilize it for things like acquiring Blanchard Mountain. Whether or not that could be considered again as a method to pay for it is a good question. We'd have to get around, frankly, some of the more conservative property rights people in Skagit County who were able to create enormous fear around the idea of creating a Metropolitan Parks District, which I thought was unfair, but not a bad idea.
Yeah, and the issue, I think, is there sufficient time to do that? Because I think it would take a while to put that together.
So, go ahead. You had something.
I was just going to ask, Tim, are you familiar with the deadline that the Commissioner of Public Lands has given for when logging must begin?
I think it's
by the summer.
Yes, I think it must proceed, at least in some part, by the summer if they do not come up with a funding mechanism.
Or some other kind of legislative fix.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that in the telephone town hall, Representative Morris gently urged that we call our 42nd representatives to support alternative funding for the mountain. So you may take that as your go-to for the week if you are so inclined. I think it is an important issue. I also just wanted to put a little coda on this story that they are trying, and Jeff Morris is very involved in trying to rename Blanchard Forest to Harriet Spinell Forest. And he noted in the town hall that Blanchard Forest is not an official name. It's just sort of been referred to as that. And I want to quote Jeff Morris on this. Representative Morris said, Senator Spinell's work to protect Chaconet, Blanchard, Lake Whatcom Forest lands, and for future generations was of particular importance to her. reminder of her dedication and commitment to public lands would be in naming her and naming this after her, the commitment to public lands that so many of us enjoy. And Alex, you had talked about what all of the numerous things that take us away from funding things like this and what's happening in the legislature. And we are going to take a closer look at that when we come back right after this.
At the Alzheimer's Association, our mission is to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through the advancement of research, to provide and enhance care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of brain health. If you or someone you know is caring for a loved one with younger onset Alzheimer's or dementia, there is help available. Alzheimer's Association Family Caregiver Support Groups provide a consistent and caring place for people to learn, share, and gain emotional support from others who are also on a unique journey of providing care to a person with younger onset memory loss diagnosed by the age of 65 or younger. Meetings are starting soon. For information, call Linda Whiteside at 206-529-3875 or 1-800-848-7097. Our vision is a world without Alzheimer's. For more information, visit www.alz.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Cascadia News Now with your hosts this week, Tim Johnson, Seth Fleetwood, and Alex Remmel. I'm Stephanie Contouris. Well, we hinted at some of the legislative bills that are keeping Blanchard from being on our radar a lot of the times, and we just hit the legislative cutoff. That means there's a day in the session in our state House and Senate that the bills can go no further. So now we're going to take a quick look at what lived and what died. This is maybe not the most important bill in the world, but I personally was very sad that once again the repeal of the death penalty in Washington State failed. And I was pretty upset that there's going to be no special state licensing or more extensive background check for buying a semi-automatic assault weapon in Washington State. What about you guys?
Inslee's moratorium on the death penalty is still in place, though, right?
Temporarily, but it would be nice to have it be done.
Sure.
Yeah, but you bring up an excellent point.
And the other thing about that's another one of those bills, and we can talk about this, and we probably will talk about this, but it had a lot of bipartisan support. There were Republicans that agreed that the death penalty is an archaic form, and it really doesn't serve the state of Washington. It hasn't been in place. It's not doing anything. But the issue is you've got to be able to bring these things to the floor for a general vote of the assembly. And one of the things that we're seeing as a strategy is various mechanisms that prevent these bills from coming out of committee and going to the General Assembly. And so a lot of bills died last week because they couldn't get them out of their committees.
Are there any other RIPs that anybody wants to bring up for?
Well, there's one that's hopefully going to come back. The solar production tax credit technically died in committee in the House last week. It also never even got a hearing in Doug Erickson's committee in the Senate. Jeff Morris has indicated that it will be considered necessary to implement the budget, which is the exemption to the rule that it had to have gotten out of the policy committee. But I think its odds get a little bit worse having not made cutoff. And that's the production credit that has really led to an enormous boom both in installation of solar panels on homes and businesses all over Washington.
And there's a federal tax credit. So far, it hasn't been touched. That's because everything else is being attacked before it. But I imagine that the federal tax credit is probably in danger as well.
Or at the very best case scenario, probably won't be extended.
Extended.
And it's only got a couple of years left in it. Yeah.
Does anyone know if Doug Erickson's terrorism bill died in committee?
Yeah, that died in committee. In fact, what's interesting to me is that, you know, if you're a legislator in the state of Washington, you may sponsor two or three bills yourself. And so you multiply that times the number of people in the legislature. But I think the number was, if I'm not mistaken, I think only 51 bills actually lived. Wow. Out of these, out of the House and the Senate. So, I mean, that's how bound up everything is, where you might have had hundreds of bills and only 51 came out. And some of them were bad and chewed up a lot of committee time, like, you know, Doug Erickson's terrorism bill against protesters and his bill to reauthorize or to deauthorize the decision of Lands Commissioner about Cherry Point. All of those things, they just sort of died, but they did chew up time. And then there were good bills that died because time was chewed up.
They chewed up other people's time. They didn't chew up his because he didn't bother to show up for the committee hearings on his own.
And let me just say, I know what you're getting at. And regardless of who's listening and where you are on the spectrum, let's remember we put these people in office to legislate, to govern. Whether it's bills that you like or bills that you don't like, we are paying them by the day, whether they're there or not, but we're paying them by the day to govern our state.
Right.
And so when as you point out, the paucity of bills that get through is not governance.
Right. Well, let's take a step back and say that the purpose of these committees is to vet a bill.
True.
And to make them better or to find that they're deficient and to wreck them. I mean, you know, they're not good bills. So that's the purpose of the committee. I think what's happening now as a strategy is that good purpose is being perverted to another use, which is basically just to bind everything up, grind everything down. And if you've got an agenda that, you know, government has no purpose doing anything, your aims are achieved. The aims of the general public in having these issues that we find important, like solar energy or oil safety, transportation safety, these things, you know, die without ever having been heard by the full legislature.
And I would just emphasize, in particular with the solar bill, it's not just things that we think. There's 150 jobs in Whatcom County that are dependent on that production credit, and that have been created because that credit was put in place a little over a decade ago.
Where are we with oil safety, oil transportation safety?
So that bill made it out of the policy committee in the House and is headed into the finance committee in the House.
So it may survive.
What are its? I mean, do you want to take a bet on its chances? And tell us a little about the bill,
sure.
First of all, for those of
sure.
us who don't know.
So this is, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a cleanup bill. The barrel tax that's levied on oil coming into the state that's used for cleanup and making sure that we have the safety measures in case there's a spill isn't leveled uniformly across all different kinds of transportation. It's a different tax for pipelines versus trains. And so it's leveling that. And then the other big thing that it does is requires tug escorts for barges carrying oil. In recent years, there's been more barges and fewer tankers, and our regulatory system is really aimed at tankers, and they've been shipping it through that barge loophole. So this cleans that up.
And what do you think are its chances?
It all comes down to the negotiation at the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
This didn't get a shot in the Senate because, as Tim mentioned, things just die in committee or don't even get introduced on that side because they know it's going to die in committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a silencing effect. So it really comes down to the bargaining that happens the last couple of days of the legislative
right.
session. Hopefully this is something that our folks will support and will really go to the mat for.
Right on. Well, we are rapidly running out of time, as we often do. So let's get to the meat of this conversation. And part of the reason you're here is that the absence of the senator of the 42nd has had quite the enormous impact on our session. And Seth, do you want to weigh in on that, putting you on the spot a little bit?
Well, you know, since Doug has gained fame for all these things that we dislike so in recent months, especially, although I guess it goes back to last year when he was what was his title in the Trump campaign?
Deputy
Director of the Washington mm-hmm. State. I have simply because I ran in that busy race in 2014 with him. I've sort of refrained from commenting just because I'm concerned that it would look like sour grapes. But it's increasingly difficult to remain silent.
Conversely, I wonder if you were, you know, the head of communications in the EPA right now. Things might be a little different.
You know, the reason we ran was to try and win back a majority in the Washington State Senate so that we could do a number of these important things, like pass a solar panel bill or create some climate legislation and join Oregon and California and British Columbia in a sort of a Northwest Pacific compact of some sort to fight all these important things. But I guess we've got Doug instead, and he's not even present.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, and I'll let Alex talk about it in just a second, but the interesting thing is there are many, many facets to this. There is the actively not being there, but then there's also the passive effect on the legislature itself where without him there, they're tied, and the Republicans do not want to lose issues based upon a tie and a tie-breaking vote by the lieutenant governor, so they're not even bringing stuff forward. So it's got two dimensions to it. One of which, you know, I suppose if you were a Republican, you'd say, well, you know, his absence is not making any effect on particular things that I'm interested in, but he's actually kind of mucking up the state right at the moment and grinding it to a halt.
So I've done a little bit of digging on this, and I would just a couple of facts and figures to throw into the discussion. He's missed more than 75% of his committee hearings. He hasn't been present for them. The three committees that he's on are three of the four least productive committees. You talked about the number of bills that aren't getting through. The committees that Doug Erickson is on are at the top of the list of unproductive committees. The other thing that I think is really interesting and doesn't bode well for the future when there's a lot more floor action that needs to happen. Senator Braun's bill that is intended as a solution to the McCleary challenges, funding schools in through with state dollars instead of with local tax levies, was rushed to the floor. I mean, and I don't think you can argue that it wasn't rushed. It was introduced on a Saturday and voted on a Wednesday, on the following Wednesday, and that was the one. That Wednesday was the day Senator Erickson was in town. Turns out, after it was approved, that there was something approaching, Crosscut is reporting, something approaching $1 billion math error in that bill.
Yeah, I was just going to make an observation. I think it's interesting to ponder what effect this is having on his constituency, that is the Republican constituency in the 42nd district. We all know that after 2010 census and the 2012 redistricting, the 42nd district was made, quote unquote, safe for Republicans. A majority of likely voters are Republican. I think they've got like a 16, 17, 18 point advantage up there. That's the handicap for Democrats. I'm curious to know to what extent Republicans who voted for him are going to regard his behavior as something that might cause them to support the recall. That's an open question.
Well, right. And so absolutely that leads us to, Alex, you were going to, we're in our last couple minutes, and you're going to just tell us about the recall movement. What is it? Is it likely?
So there has been paperwork filed with the county auditor's office. I'm not part of that movement, but I'm just reporting the news. It's been filed. The next step in that process is that there's a hearing to evaluate whether there's sufficient cause to proceed with the recall. And then if the conclusion of that hearing is, yes, there's sufficient cause, then they start gathering signatures.
Right.
And then it's a high bar. It's a high bar both for cause and for number of signatures. But it's important.
And it indicates that there's an uprising of his constituents. And I'm sure we will be tracking that more. Unfortunately, we have already run out of time. You've been listening to Cascadia News Now with your amazing co-host this week, Seth Fleetwood and Alex Rammel, joining Tim Johnson and me, Stephanie Contouris. The show Cascadia News Now is produced by Stephanie Contouris. Our technical director is Dave Willingham. We are at Facebook at Cascadia News Now, and you can listen to archive episodes at cascadianewsnow.com. We would love to hear from you. 360-499-6749. Again, 360-499-6749. You are tuned into KMRE Bellingham, kmre.org, 102.3 FM.